Good morning, Jenny. How are you? Your mic is on mute.
Hello, how are you?
Good. How are you? You sound good.
Good, thank you.
Is this your first space, or have you done other ones?
This will be my fourth, I believe.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Good. Good. So it's Shajak.
It's like haggis with an S on the front. So it's dead. My name is Jennifer Shagus in real life.
Shagus. All
Yeah.
right. Jennifer Shagus. Got it. Cool. All right. So we'll get started in a couple of minutes. Let me just go on mute and tweet it out one more time.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Got a pretty good turnout here. All right. So, yeah, this is Robson, Goldfinger on CEO.C. Obviously, you probably follow me on Twitter if you're on the space, so you don't need to know that. And we're joined by somebody who I guess I've been following for several months now. And definitely her tweets have caught my attention in the last couple months. And even though we were in Vancouver at the same time during MIF in VRIC, we didn't actually meet. But I know she was in attendance at MIF because of all the tweets and covered a lot of presentations, a lot of really good content. So welcome, to Jennifer Chagas,
Yes.
is that how you say your name?
Yeah. Thank you.
All right, Jenny. So it's a pleasure to have her here. And the first question I want to ask actually is, what is your, inception story in junior mining and the resource sector? How did you get interested in it? And yeah, when did it start?
Okay. Well, so I was previously an energy trading analyst at TransCanada Energy, which was a marketing division of TransCanada Pipelines, and that no longer exists as it was back then. But I worked on a large open concept trading floor, and I analyzed trading activity in the energy markets and executed occasional trades. So my background is in commodity trading, but it was more of a risk management type role back then. So I stayed at home and I raised my kids, and when the pandemic started, I would say that was probably one of the worst points in my life. My mom had passed away and my son got really ill with COVID. I lost my dog and I went through a separation, and it sounds like a bad country song or something, but basically the most stressful life events that you can have happened to me in the span of about 18 months. And I decided I can wallow in self-pity, or I can take these lemons and make lemonade. And so I used that opportunity to reinvent myself. And I started a small fund. And at the time, like Twitter was such a godsend because I was able to become part of a community that had like-minded interests and I had companionship when I needed it. I spent far too much time on Twitter and I still do. But it's been life-changing for me. And somehow I ended up getting lured into Mintwit and the junior mining sector. And I think it's probably because I was reading all the headlines about the energy transition. And it was just so clear, the writing was on the wall, that we're going to require a lot of metals to meet this seemingly unrealistic goals that have been set by government. And I still see people on Twitter, they say like, this is impossible. They seem to think we're going to hit a dead end and give up. But that ball is rolling, and I don't think it can be stopped. There's gigafactories being built globally. There's mandates to rid the world of ICE vehicles and fossil fuels. And then you see companies like Teck and Vale and BHP all increasing their battery metal exposure. So if anything, it might take longer than expected, but there's no turning back. And one of the biggest issues, of course, is the lack of new discoveries. So in my opinion, there is no better place right now to be invested than exploration companies. I'm just really excited to be here because I think we have a bit of a generational opportunity, and I think we're going to do really well over the next couple of years.
Yeah, that's a good inception story. So to be clear on the timeline here, so your woe story where all those unfortunate things happened, that was like 3 years ago, is that
Yeah,
right?
just about the time that the pandemic was starting, it
Okay.
was kind of all coming into place around then. So,
So you were risk, manager for, like an energy trader in Alberta, and you decided to move on from that.
I wanted to do my own thing. And initially, when I started the fund, I did have a few energy stocks that were in there. But I have a brother that he's kind of always been a pest. He's about 8 years older than me, and he's a real uranium bull, which I am actually not. And I don't really want to get into that discussion because that's it can get pretty heated with him in particular. But I think that was part of it for me is when I watched him invest in some of these companies, and I disagreed with some of it, and we would have these lengthy discussions. I just kind of got lured into this whole sector. And like I said, reading about all the headlines of the energy transition, I do still invest in Canadian energy companies. I'm part of the Canadian oil mafia and proud of it. But I certainly kind of gravitated towards these exploration companies and the mining sector, just as kind of my comfort zone.
The Canadian oil mafia. That's funny. When I hear that on a Spaces, I always giggle. That's funny, but it actually exists, and that's good. You're a proud
I even
member.
have the attire. I have a couple shirts.
That's funny. Yeah. So yeah, and I like Cameco and NexGen. I've owned those stocks. For several years, and made some good trades on them, in recent months. So I'll definitely have an argument with you if you want to, do that.
Another time.
Okay. So yeah, let's move on and talk about how you use social media to receive information and new ideas. I mean, obviously, we're both pretty active on various platforms, and we're obviously on this platform quite a bit, as you said, too much. So how do you utilize it? What can you, I don't know, it's a kind of a broad question, but maybe you can give us an example of a situation where you saw a tweet, you saw a chat comment, piqued your interest, and then it evolved into a trade or an investment idea.
Okay. If you can just maybe I'll just go back to the initial discussion, how I got kind of lured into the sector. So I found forming relationships here is key. And personally, I have well over 200 people in my DMs now. It's this like constant exchange of information. And I really love it. But sometimes it's frustrating because I can't keep up. But I found it's, you know, if I am kind to people and I share information with them, it's just this mutually beneficial relationship. You scratch my back and I'll scratch yours. And I'll answer questions for people and I'll provide them with information. And in exchange, people will share their feedback and their finds with me. And it's just been a real privilege. And I really appreciate everybody that messages me. One of the first people that I encountered in Mintwit was Nate Smith. And if people don't follow him, he's just such a great guy. I would recommend following him. But we were discussing at the time the merits of buying Filo del Sol versus Jose Maria. And he was kind enough to pass on this Go Rosen report to me about the problems with copper supply. And he also mentioned the Lassonde curve. And back then, I wasn't familiar with that. But now, those are really the first two things that I pass on to anyone that's new in mining. And I'm really grateful to Nate because that was such a great place to start. But I also have my friend Olaf, who I think I see him in the audience, but he's my best Twitter friend. I love this guy. So I call him my stock soulmate. And we're both really passionate about these penny stocks and we're always exchanging ideas. And sometimes I admit I have a bit of a struggle with FOMO. So Olaf will talk me down off the ledge. And he said that's like eating soup with a fork sometimes. But I credit Olaf for passing on the Patriot battery metals to me when it was just 37 cents. So having that kind of sharing of information just can bring incredible opportunities your way. And then I passed on Brunswick Exploration to him and we're both doing well on that. So if you can share like information like that in a group or with a single friend, you know, it's such a benefit to you. And I really encourage people, you know, don't be afraid to reach out because I know sometimes people have messaged me and they say, I'm sorry to bother you. And I laugh and, you know, it's not a bother at all. I love doing this and it really is mutually beneficial. But now I run a small discussion group in my DMs and we all kind of bring our own little area of expertise and it's just been wonderful because I can bounce ideas off of everyone there and it's like we form this one giant brain. So it's much better than if I were just doing this on my own. So I really suggest that to people if you can, you know, form a little discussion group and then you can bring something to the table and feel you can discuss ideas without fear of criticism or backlash. Because quite honestly, sometimes in your timeline, people aren't always polite or kind. So it's kind of nice to have a bit of a private circle like that. But you were talking about the four social media or the social media sites that you use, and I use four of them. So, of course, I'm always on Twitter. My favorite, sometimes I think I like it more than Twitter, is CEO.ca. And then I use Common Stock and LinkedIn. So LinkedIn, you know, I think people don't generally view it in this way, but I found there's occasional posts on there that are useful, and sometimes you'll catch something surprising on there. I found my manganese pick on LinkedIn, and then I noticed something unusual there regarding my top pick that I'll mention a little bit later. So, you know, people shouldn't just assume LinkedIn is not overly useful other than networking, because I have found some interesting details on there. But for Common Stock, so I'm a commodity specialist for them. And I love using it as a means of research because for me, it's like putting my due diligence down on paper and then others can see it and I'm open to feedback there as well. And it's just a great place because you can have a really constructive discussion there beyond 280 characters. And I often state, you know, investors don't do themselves any favors if they live in an echo chamber. So it's beneficial, you know, if you listen to opposing viewpoints, because you're going to either increase your conviction or somebody's going to raise some red flags. And either way, it's like a win-win for you. But I go by the rule, trust but verify, because these chat boards on CEO and everywhere, I avoid Reddit like the plague, but they're full of both trolls and cheerleaders. So you really have to be careful what information you're taking in. And like I said, trust but verify. But CEO.ca is my go-to all day, every day. And people tell me that they don't use it, and I'm in shock because it's such an incredible resource and it's free. So you can check shorts and volumes on that site. You can private message people, and I just think it's underrated. I've set up my watch list there, and I use that system for electronic disclosure all the time to monitor insider activity. And then you can stay up to date on news alerts. But there's such a phenomenal amount of information on CEO. And it's things that you would never discover yourself. And so I'm always really grateful to people that share these things, because some of the things, like, I've come across, there was somebody posted a link to a satellite site where you can watch drill rigs being mobilized off the coast of Africa for Eco-Atlantic's drill program. And then I've seen articles from sources in Panama about the government's negotiations with First Quantum. There's links to Greenland newspapers that people have posted, and they're in Danish, so thank God for Google Translate. But you can gain insight into the political winds there. It is, how on earth would anyone really know what's going on in Greenland otherwise? So the other thing that I really recommend people use is on the CEO.ca homepage. If you click on the companies tab, you can use filters that are there and screen for anomalies. Like, you can check the day's largest volume, the top gainers and losers, what's been halted. And that's actually how I have discovered some of the more obscure companies that I've invested in. And, you know, to be honest, I considered CEO sentiment when I was assessing peak excitement on the Lassonde curve for my decision to sell PMET, because it was funny, you know, when Olaf passed me that tip and it was 37 cents, there was just a handful of people on that board, and it grew to this constant flow of comments that I couldn't even keep up with. So just to put that in context, I watched that, and I kind of assessed what I thought might be remaining for these drill results. And whether or not that's going to end up being completely wrong, time will tell. It's impossible to say, because I can see a buyout in Patriot's future, probably sooner than later. But I felt really good about my exit point, and it was a profitable trade for me. So I used it kind of to judge sentiment as well. And recently, one of the ones I really liked was, I came across that ATAC.
Can I slow you down for a second, Jenny? Yeah. you just unpacked a lot. So just hold that thought you're about to get into, because there's so much there to unpack. So, you know, CEO.ca is a site I know a little bit about. So what I've noticed being there since the inception, this is 8-year journey now, is the channels have evolved. It used to be, I feel like the really value-added posts reached their peak in about 2018 and 2019. There's a really quite a few very high-quality chat commentators that made contributions on a regular basis. You know, I would say a couple dozen. You know, I would put in the high-quality tier. And I feel like that's whittled down a little bit. And now you have a lot of just emotional posting, bashing, people call it pumping. I mean, you can pretty much tell who's long and who's short, who doesn't like the company and just wants to be negative on it, who's a real cheerleader and only posts positive things. It seems increasingly challenging to get sort of more objective. I don't think anybody is objective, quite honestly, mm-hmm. but more objective commentary and contributions. And so what are your thoughts on that? And do you have, I don't know, maybe a list of people that you specifically focus on what they're talking about?
I don't so much there. To be honest, I kind of ignore a lot of that noise for that reason. It's almost like you said, I haven't been there obviously as long as you have, but, it's kind of like Reddit, and that there's so many people and so many cheerleaders, and you don't know who's a paid promotional person. So I tend to drown that out. And when I go on there, I kind of skim read for links that people have posted, like the unique things that I've talked about. So I don't use it a whole lot for that. But one of the things, you know, I find most valuable about it is looking for the red flags. So if these press releases come out and people are discussing, you know, the grades in it, what they think of it, it's kind of been helpful to me to just look at it that way, more for the negatives than the positives. You know, maybe that seems kind of depressing, but for me, that's been the most helpful, is just to view it for either these articles that people will link to, or to flag any concerns that I might have. But you kind of do have to drown out a lot of that noise, because otherwise it is a lot of kind of useless information on the chat board. But that site is really just incredible, the amount of information that you can gain, you know. And I can't tell people enough. I once somebody asked me about the site, and I kind of walked them through it, and they messaged me later and said, like, I can't believe I wasn't using this before, because that companies tab that I talked about and things like that, it's just hugely beneficial. So it's unfortunate, like you say, I don't know that there's a way around that, to, you know, filter out some of these people. You kind of have to watch it carefully. And I find the same with Twitter. There's so many people that mm-hmm. get in your feed, and you just, mm-hmm. you know, if you spend enough time, you can see who the quality is, but it's hard to avoid.
Yeah, there's a lot there. And after being on for a while, you can definitely find your, I guess, group that you want to focus on, companies that you want to focus on, people that you do want to read their stuff. And it's pretty easy to tell when somebody is just only cheerleading or only bashing, and there's really not a whole lot of value if it's just completely one-sided and there's no objectivity at all, mm-hmm. right? And then the same thing on, you know, Twitter, where you get a lot of that too. I want to ask you a little bit about the private chat groups, because I think those are pretty common now. A lot of people are in private groups. How do you, I feel that sometimes a private group can get kind of noisy, especially if it's a bigger group, mm-hmm. and you usually have a few people who dominate the conversation, and just, this is like their social time, mm-hmm. right? And so there's a lot of noise that can go on. It's not so much focused on value. It's more just focused on conversation. How do you balance that out?
I'm probably the one that's guilty of being the social person in there that chats the most. So, but, you know, I limited it to 20 people. And after a while, if people aren't commenting in there and don't have much input, I'll circle back to them and say, do you still want to be a part of this group? Because I really don't want to add anybody else. And so I will give slots to other people, because it's just been a really valuable resource. So if you're careful who you let in, because I was invited to one recently, somebody just added me to one, and I couldn't keep up. There were just constant messages all day, and it was more energy based chat, and of course that does interest me, but it gets overwhelming with all of these. So if you can just maybe stick with one, and, you know, kind of limit it to who you add to it. And I'm actually very careful about dynamics in there, because I really want people that are respectful, and you know, some people can be like a bit of a bull in a china shop, and it ruins the environment and can make it a little toxic. So I'm just careful in that regard too. But I find if you limit the number of people, it's not that bad.
Yeah, exactly. So that moment where I sort of interrupted your stream of thought, do you want to go back to that thought that you were about to express a few minutes
sure.
ago?
Sure. Do you mind? I'd like to ask you a question. So, you know, you raised a good point about CEO.ca. Do you have any tips for people that, is there a way that we can maybe filter out the top accounts there to listen to? Is there a list that you would recommend? Because, you know, you have your Follow Friday on Twitter, and maybe mm-hmm. we need something like that on CEO, where somebody like you that people trust would recommend a couple of knowledgeable voices to follow on CEO.
Yeah, that's a good question. And it's challenging. I actually don't follow anybody on CEO.ca. So I just have my private channel where I have a group, mostly me talking, but there is some conversation back and forth. And I'm just mainly focused on company channels, what comes up on company channels. I mean, honestly, some of the really underfollowed people would be like Sask, you know, Express. He doesn't post a whole lot anymore, but he's very quality poster. You know, usually thoughtful commentary. I'm happy Tommy is back posting again. I mean, he's the creator of the site and he's a treasure trove of information, you know, and ideas. So that's always good. Stateside is a pretty solid commentator, and he's pretty active. And then you know, Luke Ten Have is very high quality as well. So the list is not big. Oh, and then there's Eric Coffin, of course. I mean, he's like the granddaddy, you know, legend. His chat comments are always, I mean, in my mind, he's really the number one person on the site. He's above me. I just happen to have more followers. So yeah, the list is not long, but I would say that's it. I mean, I just, there's not, you know, and it's not to say that other people don't add valuable comments, but I'll catch their comments on company channels that I'm interested in. Or maybe if they get to the popular channel, they make a comment that becomes popular, quote unquote, then I'll see it and I'll zoom in on it anyway, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, I usually catch, you know, the stuff, you know, that I want to see. But I completely agree with you with the company search features, volume, biggest gainers, losers, the SETI, you know, insiders feed is really, really valuable. I mean, that's something that you used to have to pay quite a bit for. And there's even some sites in Canada that are paying exorbitant, or they're charging people exorbitant amounts to, you know, get, you know, to get insider data. And now there's people that are posting that even in lists for free. It's just out there. You know, people are doing this to just gain clout and because they want to do it and it's interesting to them, right? So yeah, there's so much information out there for free today. The real challenge is filtering it down and not letting it be too noisy, you know? And that kind of leads me to the next question, like with PMET or something like that, where you were sort of given a tip or an idea pretty early on. I mean, I was tipped on PMET multiple times and I didn't buy it. So what actually had you pull the trigger? Obviously, that's an extraordinary example of a win and, you know, the sort of upside that can come in junior mining. Can you talk about PMET and then maybe can you give us an example of where you got a tip or an idea and it turned out not so well?
Oh, okay. So for PMET, when Olaf passed that on to me, so I have to admit, like a lot of these exploration companies, what I kind of enjoy about them, so I take very small positions, and it started that way with me with Patriot as well. So when Olaf first told me about it, I bought right away just based on some of the things that he had mentioned. And then I watched as things developed and added with conviction. So it doesn't like start as a big position for me, but as the drill results come in, and you know, you're learning more about how the management is dealing with everything, and they're proving the resource, then I will add to things like that. But it's what I like about it is, so somebody asked me the other day, how do you value a junior miner? And I don't think that you can, because that's the whole point, right? Is that they're penny stocks, they're cheap. Because really you're buying a lot of this unknown factor. And so I just don't think you can put a value on it unless you're determining what management is like. That's where I base a lot of my value. And I think I've done really well on trades that I've basically based it on the management, because you really don't know until drill results are coming in. But you're not going to see somebody like a Pierre Lassonde on a pile of junk, right? So that's why I always tell people it's so important to follow reputable names and people with a proven track record, because I think that's where you're going to find success with these junior miners. So you're asking about, back to where I was rambling on before. One of the trades that I came across recently on CEO was the ATEC resources story. So I'm sure a lot of people here heard that story, but they were trading at around 9 cents, and then they received this non-binding proposal from Victoria Gold for 12 cents a share. And I'd seen somebody mention this on the board, and I bought it immediately. And I kind of watched this ensuing discussion on Twitter and CEO. And one of the people commenting on this was Bernie Kraft from Kestrel. And Bernie has certainly been around for a number of years. So I like listening to people like that are experienced and knowledgeable. And sometimes they really give me some helpful information. But I assumed in this case, if ATAC was declining the offer, that they knew they were going to be worth a lot more, and I was happy just to hold and wait. So sure enough, they let this Victoria deadline pass, and then Hecla arrived on the scene like a week later, and they offered 14 cents a share. So I sold that at 13 and a half cents, and like within 2 weeks, I made about 50% on a quick turnaround like that. So it's wonderful if you can take advantage of information like that on these boards and even just do a quick trade. It can be incredibly profitable. But you're asking me about trades that haven't worked out so well. I can kind of go over some of these pump and dumps that initially I fell prey to, because when I first started doing this and I wasn't aware of pump.
What's the first example of a quote unquote pump and dump that comes to your mind, if you don't mind me asking?
Oh, you want me to name the actual company or okay. Is it Argentina Lithium? Lit was my first real experience. So
Lit.
yes, I don't like to
Never heard of it.
I don't like to
Oh, that was 2021. Okay, I see the chart.
yeah.
So yeah, it's interesting because the term pump and dump. Okay, so this is interesting. I just feel like it's important to stop you here and sort of dissect this a little bit. In the historical definition of pump and dump, this is a concerted group of actors who get together, hoard a bunch of stock at very low prices, and then manage to get other people to buy it at higher prices. But in reality, the company has no real value, or it could even be just a completely fraudulent idea. And then they sell it to the crowd at the higher prices, and then it goes all the way back down, and sometimes it just goes to zero. So that's a very highly illegal and frowned upon, activity that was quite common in the stock market, especially in the mining sector, 100 plus years ago. Nowadays, pump and dump is an, in my mind, it's an overused term. Sometimes the animal spirits can take stocks to crazy places, like we saw with GameStop and AMC. Were those pump and dumps? I mean, I don't think they were pump and dumps. This, I think the move in GameStop even shocked the management team. It was just insane. And that happens in the stock market all the time, where we get these crazy moves because people get really excited. And very often people who buy late then start telling the story and trying to advocate for the company, right? And I think those are the most dangerous ones. You talked about paid, marketing or paid, kind of content, whether it's articles or videos. As long as it's disclosed, I think that's totally fine and complete. It happens all the time in the sector. It's part of the world, right? As long as it's clear that this content is potentially biased, then it's fine. I think very often what I see on Twitter, co.ca, common stock, Reddit, is people are not necessarily paid, or maybe they have arrangements that they're not, disclosing, and they are just completely saying crazy things that are wild speculation, and I mean, I think we saw that in early 2021 with, with GameStop and all those meme stocks, right? There was just wild, rampant speculation, right?
So, like, you asked me a name, and I'm normally I don't like to name anybody. I have my blacklist that I've talked about that's 12 pages long, and I won't give that really to anybody because I would really, I want to, mislabel anybody as being somebody with poor intentions, because this is just my personal view of things and watching management's behavior. But I can certainly be wrong and misinterpreting things, so I'm very careful about normally naming names. For me, it's more a matter of if you watch this the electronic disclosure and you see where they're granting themselves options and then they're turning around and selling on the open market at a higher price, and this is like a repeated offense. People say, oh well, they needed to pay for a mortgage or buy a new car and cash in some stock. Well, that's okay. I mean, we all have expenses in life, but quite often it is the same people doing the same thing at a number of companies, and you can see it reflected in the chart. And one time I posted, there's one person again, I won't name who it is, but in the span of a year, he had like 11 companies, and you could pull up the 11 charts and see this just reflected in every single chart that he would do this. He'd grant himself options and then dump, and every single chart just was a straight decline. And that's what I try and warn people about is, there's a lot of lifestyle companies out there, if that's a better term maybe than the pump and dump. And so I really just want people to be aware of that. And maybe that's a better way to look at it. But the fact is, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I think you make a good point there. I think it's very clear to it's very important to be clear that there have been a lot. I mean, just even in the last few years, there have been a lot of crazy moves in various stocks, and I think very few of them were actually orchestrated pump and dumps. And but yeah, your point is well taken about the option grants, the cheap stock, and then the management selling on the open market. It does definitely give you information, and it's important to be aware of that information and to use that information. So definitely share structure, management incentives, management compensation, looking at company financials, these are all very important parts of the research process that any investor should do, especially in the junior mining sector.
I was actually a little fussed yesterday because somebody commented to me that I could be a market maker on a stock because I do swing trading. And this person, they didn't mean to offend me by any stretch, but I think I felt mildly annoyed by the comment because it's actually true. Because I tend to trade a lot of small positions, and it's nothing that you would think would really move the market, but the thing is, with these penny stocks, that's not difficult to do. They're so illiquid. I actually had a $15 trade of someone's tank one of my stocks on the CSE by 25%. So it's not hard to move these things either. And I think if you're trading in these penny stocks, you kind of have to accept that. And that was, one of the things I retweeted your piece about the key to being a great speculator, position sizing. I love that post that you did. And I hope people will take the time to read it. I can maybe I'll retweet it again in a month or two and just make sure people take notice. Because you mentioned, too often novice investors in these microcap stocks, they take positions that are too big for the volatility that the stocks can experience. And then the end result is that they liquidate these positions after these big losses. And for myself, like I said, I trade a lot of these small positions. And it's for me, it's not unusual for me to be holding over 50 in my portfolio, which I know some people think that's a little crazy, but works for me. But even if you've like vetted management, you feel comfortable with the share structure, the jurisdiction, and you're confident that they're sitting on a great deposit, there's things that can change overnight. There can be a weather event, an election result, environmental protest, or a strike, and all of these can result in significant losses at any time and anywhere. And when people say to me, you know, I want a safe jurisdiction, I'm sorry, but I don't think there is such a thing. So I honestly, I never invest more than I can afford to lose, or any amount that would, you know, cause me to lose sleep at night. And so I think that's one of the best tips that you can give to people. And that's why I really loved your article. It's really key for,
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, that's a really important point, that, you know, liquidity is a big thing. In microcaps. It's not just in junior mining. It's just any, you know, basically any company under $50 million market cap, you know, liquidity is an issue. And I'm actually dealing with that right now in two big positions I have. But I'm, you know, I'm a big boy and I knew what I was getting into. So just, I have, you know, holdings that I couldn't even sell in a day if I wanted to in some stocks. And I'm just in it. I'm in it for the long haul. So sometimes, you know, you got to be aware that sometimes the, you know, liquidity can dry up. Especially if you have, you know, 500,000 shares or 1 million shares, stock is trading 30,000 shares a day. You're in it for a while. And, yeah, that's a big part of the sector is sizing, you know. And one of the things I see on CEO.ca, you know, over the last 8 years is people do often get way too big and stuff, and they don't realize that, like you said, things can change, and sometimes it can change fairly gradually over many months. And I think we had some really good examples of that in late 2021, early 2022, where I saw some really popular stocks that were had 100 plus people in the company channels, and people were posting bought more, you know, and they're getting likes from their cohorts, you know, and the stock kept going down. And that can happen, and averaging down over and over again, sometimes isn't a good idea. Yeah, sometimes it's really a really bad idea, and you have to be aware of when to say, "Okay, enough is enough. I might be wrong on this, and I'm not going to risk anymore." You know, I don't know the future. I don't know everything that's going to happen in the macro, and that's another thing about a lot of people try to explain junior mining stock moves on some things, you know, the management did, you know, the results or whatever. A lot of it is the macro. A lot of it is just the overall broader market moving. Macro, you know, market sentiment is driving a lot of these stocks. And people always want to have some neat and tidy, you know, explanation for every day's market move. And it just doesn't work like that. So let me ask you some pitfalls. So maybe one or two like really clear pitfalls that newer investors should be aware of, like big mistakes that maybe you've made in the past that just know to avoid now.
For one thing is trusting strangers. So, you know, when I first started, there were a couple of big accounts, and myself and a lot of novices would maybe judge somebody's reliability on the number of followers that they have, when really that doesn't mean a whole lot. So I've said this before, this exact statement is, you never listen to anybody, including me, without taking a long, hard look yourself. Because these stock tips are great if they work, but more often than not that they don't. And so if you've performed this due diligence yourself, you're going to have stronger conviction, and that's going to see you through this volatility more than if you just blindly accepted the word of some stranger on Twitter. So I really encourage people to do the work themselves, and don't, like, I know I've had people tell me, "Oh, I bought this stock because you suggested it, Jenny." And I was like, please don't do that. You know, I'm flattered, but I make mistakes and I miss red flags. So I just really encourage people to have a good look themselves. It's so important. So that probably is.
Yeah, that's a really good point. So you can get ideas from other people. You can read, articles, watch, YouTube, videos with the CEO or whatever. There's lots of ways to get ideas, lots of ways to get information. But at the end of the day, it's up to each one of us to come up with, with our own thesis, our own sizing of the trade or the investment, and then risk management is absolutely up to each one of us, and nobody can do that for us because nobody knows our age or, risk tolerance,
Exactly.
what our income is, et cetera, et cetera. And so I'm glad you mentioned that. That's such an important point. And think for yourself. Like, yeah, that's so powerful to just think for ourselves, like put it together, myself. And then if I'm wrong, I've got no one else to blame but me. And if I'm right, then okay, I can take a, victory lap and I made money. So that's good enough, right? And now the final point, pitch us on your favorite stock right now. And I don't want to put a lot of pressure on you, so you don't feel comfortable with that. But I just thought it would be interesting to just hear your best idea. And obviously, all the, disclaimers, all the stuff, we'll throw that out there. Of course, you're probably biased. You probably own the stock, right? You may sell it anytime, but let's hear your best idea right now. I'm just kind of intrigued.
Okay. So I kind of I haven't talked about this one a whole lot. I've been talking in the in my DMs with people about it, is that it was a little under the radar, but I think there could be potentially really big upside on this one. It's Camino Corporation's Core.V. So first, let me say their projects are located in Peru. So if anybody has like a weak stomach for jurisdiction risk, then this probably isn't one for you. But I'm a believer. I heard Ross Beaty speak at that BRIC, and he said buy when there's blood on the streets because that's when the real money is made. And I think that that's the case here. I think that stock is significantly undervalued in my opinion. So I started buying it back in November because again I used that CEO feature to look at these volume spikes, and one day it had over 12 million shares traded, and the average volume on it is around 265,000. So it has this weird history of volume spikes, and I still can't put my finger on this why that's been the case. But it stayed range bound for some time at about 4 cents. And yesterday, people probably saw me tweeting about it because it closed up 60% yesterday. But there's a number of reasons why I really like this particular company. So Camino owns 100% of these three properties that they have in Peru. There's Maria Cecilia, there's Los Chapitos, and then there's Plata Dorada. So Plata Dorada is a 3,800 hectare high-grade copper silver project. It's accessible all year by paved highway, all-weather dirt roads, and that one, the company's just currently defining their exploration drill targets. They haven't really started on that one, but that's one of just three. So I'm going to get to the best one here. Save the best for last. But Maria Cecilia is another one that they have that's so located in a prolific mining jurisdiction. And the project is over 7,000 hectares, and it has geological similarities to one of Peru's largest copper mines, Antamina, which is located about 100 kilometers away. But the one I'm really interested in right now is their Los Chapitos. So that's it's a new resource in a major IOCG system. And I came across this BN Americas article that described it as one of the top five key copper exploration projects in Peru. And it's geologically similar to these nearby mines, Marcona and Minta Justa. So the thing with Minta Justa, that is a $1.6 billion greenfield project, and Camino with all three, last I checked, was sitting just under 13.9 million. So if you know just one of their projects is similar to that Minta Justa, that's a pretty impressive comparison. And Los Chapitos, the infrastructure is there to build a mine. There's power, water, access to transport, and I like their share structure as well. So the insiders own about 12%, and Denham Capital owns 15%. Delbrook owns 11%. So there's significant institutional ownership too. But the two things that I really love about this, the first one is the CEO. So His name is, I'm going to butcher his name, so apologies, Jay, if you ever hear this, but it's a really hard one to pronounce. So I think it's Jay Schmelauskas. So he, you know, I do my research here, and part of like what I was saying before, it's so important to me to find management that is, you know, reputable, has a proven track record. And if you haven't heard of Jay, I don't think you're going to forget this detail when I tell you. So he is the former CEO of Western Lithium, which is now Lithium Americas. So obviously everybody knows LAC, but the co-founder of Western Lithium was Edward Flood. And he was just legendary and a first mover in the lithium sector. And his son, Zach Flood is with Kenorland. And I had the honor of chatting with Zach when I was in Vancouver, and he had wonderful things to say about Jay as well. So it's kind of nice to hear from somebody connected like that. But I wanted to say too, Zach, incidentally, he's considered to be one of the best for the next generation of geologists. And I think that's a name that people should be watching. But back to Jay. So he successfully financed and developed exploration projects into producing mines. He's got that track record. He has strong international capital markets reach. But here's the thing, I was talking about LinkedIn before. So Jay is actually a consultant to Robert Friedland's private equity group, HPX. And one day I was on LinkedIn and I noticed that a top exec from Ivanhoe Electric had liked a number of Camino's posts. So could be nothing, but I'm just saying, I noticed this connection, so it could be interesting too. But aside from Jay, the second thing that I think could make CORE exceptional, so they just had this recent joint venture arrangement with Nitsitsu Mining from Japan. So on February 1st, they had this non-binding LOI where Nitsitsu can earn a 35% interest in this Los Chupitos project by making payments and expenditures over $10 million for over 3 years. And proceeds are going to be applied towards exploration and drilling, et cetera. So that's no dilution for shareholders. And Nitsitsu has until the end of April. So they're on the ground right now. If you follow Camino's Twitter account, you can see they're performing their due diligence. And if they sign that agreement and it's finalized, then I think maybe the end of April, you could see another reasonable boost to the share price. So, you know, this was already a high conviction pick for me. But when I was going over my notes to chat with you this morning, I just, you know, aside from jurisdiction risk, I think it's pretty fantastic, and it could be a hero or a zero. And that's what I'm very careful about telling people, is this whole never invest more than you can afford to lose, because as much as I love Jay and what he's sitting on, you never know. It's Peru. So.
Right. Yeah. Right. It's junior mining. Yeah. It's Latin America. It's a lot of things, right? Yeah. So let me ask you some questions. What's your cost basis? Like, you know, when did you start to buy?
At 4 cents.
At 4 cents. Okay. So I see the chart. I see why you started to buy. It's so beaten down, sort of forming a rounding bottom. It clearly has support at 3.5, 4 cent area. I totally get that. You like the management team. You like the CEO. Projects have potential. Yeah. I get it. I totally get it. The question then would be, so like, where do you take profits? It spiked to 8.5. So you got a double. That's pretty good, you know? So that would be my first question. And then the next one is like, you know, you said earlier, I wouldn't say it's impossible. It's very challenging to value an early stage exploration company. It really is. You know, this company, I could justify a $5 million valuation, and maybe with the right, you know, results, I could justify a $50 million valuation, right? It's so wide. It all depends on, you know, the results. It all depends upon overall market sentiment. You know, it's so hard to gauge. And obviously, you know, this is what I do, but even it's what I do, it's still very difficult. And I'm never highly confident. I have like maybe a 60% probability that this is undervalued or that's overvalued, but it's never 90%. It's never 100%, right? It's tough. It's really tough to value some of these. So I guess, yeah. So my first question is, where do you sell? And the second question is, how do you value it? Like, what could the potential value be here?
Well, I think that is impossible to say, but so normally what I would do in other cases, and I did this with Patriot, is that, and I regretted it, I took profits like three times. I try and take back my initial investment on a lot of these, and then it's basically just playing with the house's money and letting it ride. But I regret that with Patriot, that I took, you know, it was a high conviction pick for me, and had I left the whole ball of wax in there, I'd be a lot happier. But so in this case, it is a conviction pick for me, and I am not going to take anything from it right now, because, you know, I bought prior to this Natitsu deal, and seeing them on the ground there, they had to pay $100,000, I think it was, to perform their due diligence as part of this agreement. So that speaks to me as to how they're viewing this project. And then, you know, it could, if they decide not to sign, then, you know, end of April, I'm not going to be too happy that I maybe didn't. But in this case, I'm willing to take a risk on that, because the fact that, you know, Japanese people tend to be a little bit conservative. And so they paid this money to just go there and do their due diligence. That to me is saying a lot about just one of their three properties. And so in this case, I'm not ready to take anything off the table yet, because I think the end of April, you're going to see maybe if the Japanese sign this agreement, there's going to be another rise in share price. So in the case of a company like this, I'm going to keep my money in there and watch for these developments, and hopefully not regret, like I said, you know, taking any off the table right now with the rise like yesterday. But I'm looking at the volume, you know, today compared to yesterday, and what was yesterday, over 2 million, and now it's 300,000. So this one definitely has these swings like that. So yeah, I'm just gonna base it as we go here, building my conviction. But with what they're sitting on and the Japanese involvement in this particular case, I don't intend to take anything off the table right now. If anything, I still think it's cheap. If you know, I mentioned the properties that you can compare it to. So if you trust in management.
When are they going to drill? I see the news release saying that their initial exploration target is to get to a minimum of 20 to 30 million metric tons of resource. I mean, obviously, if they do that, it's going to be worth more than 13 million. Mm-hmm. When are they going to drill, and how do they get to that size?
So this is, again, you know, with Jay, if you placed your trust in somebody like that, and he gets this deal done, and he doesn't have to dilute shareholders, then he's got this money from Nintetsu to actually go ahead and proceed with the drill program. So I'm not sure. This is the one that I was talking about that actually responded to my email, which is important to me. And they had mentioned some of the details in there about drilling. So if anybody wants to DM me for that info, I can share it. But I think that's probably what maybe they're waiting on to progress here, but they are permitted on these projects that back in 2020. And I think that's probably why it was so cheap as well, not just the violence in Peru, but a lot of these projects were put on hold throughout COVID, and they came back to them. And so I think you're kind of back at the beginning phases here. And if this Natitsu deal goes through and they're funded, then I think you'll see a lot more activity.
Yeah. Okay. So that's a clear catalyst that we have, you know, within the next couple months, I guess. Right. Okay. Yeah. And so you're betting the valuation is low, and you're betting with the jockey. You like the CEO, you like the team, and you're betting this deal gets done. So there's a clear catalyst. Okay, good. That's a pretty clear thesis. I mean, I can dig it. Somebody asked, what's your username on, you know, CO.ca?
Sanibel Chick.
Hold on. Can you say it again?
Sanibel Chick. Because Sanibel, Florida is one of my favorite places in the world. I love gold.
Oh, Sanibel Island. Yes, it is a very beautiful place. Mm-hmm. Okay. Sanibel Chick. That's her CEO username. Very good. I guess I have one more question. You know, this sector, I mean, obviously, in the realm of a lot of the experienced people in the sector who have been at this for 20, 30, 40 years, you're still kind of new at it. But I would argue that living through 2020, 2021, 2022 is like a lifetime of experience, because so much has happened in the world, in the broader markets, and in the junior mining sector in those 3 years. So I would say you're pretty well experienced at this point. How do you stay optimistic when, you know, obviously 2022 sucked. February generally sucked for the sector. How do you stay optimistic when it's so easy to become jaded and grouchy and skeptical?
You know, I noticed that a lot in MinTwit, that there are people that are kind of grouchy and skeptical. And I can understand it, because I can see how you get burned. But for me, there's so much to that, because I'm just really fortunate to speak with the people that I do here on this site. And when I have a red day and it's a little bit depressing, you know, somebody will crack a joke or I can, you know, go to them for a bit of emotional support. So that alone, you know, we're talking about this, the benefits and downfalls to social media, but I have to say the emotional support is huge, and I'll try and add a dad joke to my timeline once in a while, just to keep people upbeat, because, you know, it can be depressing when you have these down days. So that's part of it. And then being aware that these stocks are extremely volatile, and, you know, if you're you have high conviction and you see a big dip one day and you can't find any reason behind it, like you said, it's the macro. And so I think people have to really keep that in the back of their mind too, is that you know, these days are going to happen. Maybe instead of days, they're months, but you just have to brace for that and keep in mind, it's not necessarily that you made a bad choice, but this is just the nature of the game. So, and as we discussed at the beginning too, I just, you know, I look at this and I cannot see how we're just not in the early stages of this commodity super cycle. I really think that we are. And the lack of discoveries, and I see every day, I'm combing through headlines all day and reading, which I find it fascinating and I love it, but it really reaffirms everything that I've said. I just think we're presented with a gift here. And so that's another reason, even if it's a down day, if you have cash to drop on one of your conviction picks that's on sale, do it. Because I have found rarely there's a time that, you know, I regret that. It really, if you're given this gift, somebody, I think it was Latin Minds account on Twitter said, volatility, opportunity is thy name. And it's so true. You're really getting a gift with some of these when they're on sale. And so if you can look at it that way, I think that's reason for optimism.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a good way to look at it. I mean, I agree with you. I've got some, you know, videos on, you know, YouTube that I've made in the last 4 or 5 months talking about long-term bull thesis for gold, super cycle, and metals. And that's definitely one of my main themes. So yeah, I agree with you that where we're going, the tricky part is the path to get there. And that's the challenging part. I'm pretty confident where we're going to be 5, 6, 7 years from now, or at least somewhat what it's going to look like. I am very uncertain of the path to get there, and that's the tricky part. And so if I had any sort of parting, you know, wisdom from being, you know, around for a while, it's that, you know, basically anything can happen in the market. So never be too certain of anything. And also, nobody knows anything, including me. So I think those are humbling ways to, you know, look at it. And that doesn't mean you shouldn't listen to ideas and process it for yourself and come up with your own ideas, but also realize that everything in the market is constantly in flux and the landscape can change sharply in a relatively short period of time. So yeah, we are climbing a wall of worry in this metals bull market, this super cycle, if we want to call it that. And so, yeah, thank you for your time, Jenny. I this has been a great hour. We've delved into a lot. I think this has been a wide-ranging and valuable conversation, and I appreciate everything you do on, you know, Twitter and CEO and all your contributions and the kind words that you have for me. I appreciate it. Sometimes it's, you know, it's good to hear that feedback, and my content is adding some value.
Absolutely. Thank you for inviting me. It's been a pleasure, and thank you for all that you do, because you know, I'm always left in awe that I can access this information for free, and that people like you are generous enough to take your time and share it with us. And I learned so much from these social media accounts that I really feel blessed. So thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
Awesome. Thank you, and have a wonderful day. Cheers.
Thank you.